Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Just as freedom came to Ghana in 1957, so it came to jazz just a few years later, along with John Coltrane and Ornette Coleman, pianist Cecil Taylor helped usher in a turning point in the history of music. In fact, this recording is from 1960. Taylor's fierce, percussive style of playing was so trailblazing that some argue it's made more of an impact on rhythm than all but a few drummers. But he is a pianist, and I'm pleased to welcome Cecil Taylor to our Soundcheck studio. And Cecil, you and of all people, John Zorn, a younger sax player, both of you recipients of the prestigious MacArthur Grant, are performing this weekend at Jazz at Lincoln Center.
So they tell me.
Did you ever think you would see the day when you, Cecil Taylor, were being presented at Jazz at Lincoln Center, which, by reputation at least, seems like it would, this would be a stretch for them.
what year was Lincoln Center Philharmonic Hall built? Okay.
I don't know. 65?
I first went to Europe in the fall of 62. And when I came back, two Euro-American college students for New Year's Eve in 62-63, rented that hall. The performers were John Coltrane with Eric Dolphy, Art Blakey, and my group, which was Jimmy Lyons, who worked with me for 26 years, Sonny Murray, who had brought Albert Eiler to me, and so the three of us in New Year's Eve. So Philharmonic Hall is not a new place to me.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, it was the Berlin Philharmonic was built at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You mean the Berlin Philharmonic Hall?
Yes, yeah. In Berlin. And the Philharmonic in Berlin, the acoustics have never been changed.
Well, and of course, when you talk about Philharmonic Hall here in New York, that's now down the block from where you're actually playing at the Rose Theater, which is a much more recent building, just a couple of years old. And once again, on this weekend, it will be, as it was all those years ago, you leading a trio with your old friend Henry Grimes.
Indeed. But it was Sonny Murray. Henry and Sonny and Jimmy played one evening at the Take Three, which was a coffee house located on Bleecker Street. Henry Grimes had been playing with Sonny Rollins. And the night that my father died in 61, I had to make an appearance at Birdland on Monday night, and I had gone to hear Henry, and I asked him if he'd be interested, called him, had never played with him, and I remember when we got up on the stage, I looked into his eyes, and I knew that I had to say nothing. He has marvelous eyes, and he also paints, you see. He's an extraordinary bass player. And then when we were to go to Europe, something happened and he disappeared. I did not see Henry for maybe 30 years.
Mm. So how is it to be working with him again?
Well, it's changing.
Hmm.
I mean, mutation is everything, you know.
Yeah.
It's called the Queen of British musicals. I went to see her, and who was her leading man? Anyway, there was a tune from her called Getting to Know You.
Okay.
So that's what Henry and I are doing now. We're getting to know you. There was also a wonderful song from that show called March of the Siamese Children. And if you've ever heard monks jackying, there's a certain similarity. The architecture or the arc of the melodies are similar. But, of course, the culture makes the music quite different.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both lovely, lovely tunes.
Well, and, with the case of monks jacking, yet another example of how, you know, we think of jazz as being in often this, like, corner outside of the mainstream, when in fact it's the same continuum of music, and the great jazz players have always responded to, you know, developments in popular music and Broadway.
Well, I'm not
and,
so sure about that, but, I mean...
Well, Charlie Parker doing the changes over a Gershwin song and all
that kind of stuff. But you must remember this. At a certain period in Stravinsky's...
Another great song. You must remember this.
Yes. But there was a certain period in the 20s when Stravinsky, after Wright's and Petrushka and Firebird, he wrote a piece called Lenos,
right,
which was piano and percussion. But in the middle of the 20s, he would take music of Vivaldi, for instance, you see, and then construct above this. And out of that came Symphony of Psalms, for instance, which was written at that time. So, and that's interesting about when you talk about Byrd and Gershwin, because there's a record that Byrd made, and they called it Embraceable You, and I do not know why they called it Embraceable You. First of all, you must remember that whatever the framework of Embraceable You was, when you looked and you see, because the supreme architect of bebop was Monk, and if you think of the clusters that Monk played, if you think of him playing a cluster with minor thirds here and minor thirds down there, that whatever was used as a framework, and then, you know, we had, and that is also interesting, because that solo that Byrd takes on that is beyond belief. However,
on Embraceable You, you mean,
yes,
on that record.
You know, however, we have the Mean Devil.
Do all of your conversations go like this, where they start at one place and then suddenly we're talking about Monk and minor thirds? And
well, but you see, we're talking about music. And I'm saying, the for instance, in 1945, Stravinsky wrote Symphony in Three Movements. Well, if you look at that piece and then think about, realize that he wrote that piece when he was reorchestrating Rite of Spring. Now, you see, the thing about...
But he was orchestrating a lot of stuff back then because he wanted to get the copyrights.
If you analyze the score of Symphony in Three Movements, you will see the relationship of Rite of Spring. Now, in terms of how my mind works, the thing about living, being born in New York, have you ever seen Maya Plasetskaya on the stage? Have you ever seen Carmen Meyer on the stage? Have you ever seen Catherine Dunham on the stage?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen Geraldine Page on the stage? Have you ever seen Gloria Foster? If you live in New York, and if you had the mother that I had, you knew what you were supposed to do.
Hmm.
So, I mean, the Greek theater, for instance, you know, the African dances, it's all here. So when you talk about music, you know, if you're going to talk about jazz, nobody dares to define it because they have no idea what it is. but the point, it's a music that is quite unique on its own terms.
And perhaps Cecil Taylor never more so than when you're involved. This is from one of your actually more recent recordings from 2004, the album called simply Algonquin. Thank you. the pianist Cecil Taylor from an album called Algonquin, which was released back in 2004. Cecil Taylor's my guest. He'll be playing at the Rose Theater, home to Jazz at Lincoln Center, on Friday and Saturday night at 8 p.m., a program that'll also feature John Zorn. You mentioned before we heard this music, Cecil, that, you know, people are afraid to try and define jazz because it's just impossible to do. I mean, I think it was Louis Armstrong who had the great answer to the question, you know, what is jazz? And his answer was, man, if you got to ask, you'll never know.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, you, you've already shown us your sort of classical leanings. You know, you can quote chapter and verse on Stravinsky and what he was writing and what he was rewriting at various points. You had some classical piano background.
I don't know what that means. I asked my mother for piano lessons when I was 5 years old. And she said, I'll think about it. And the next day, she invited me into her living room. And it was hers.
Your mom had a separate living room.
At least. But anyway, and I went to sit. Now, her brother played violin, trap drums, and ragtime piano. The piano was a Lincoln. It was an upright, and they had rolls in it. And when I went to sit, she said, you will remain standing. And then she looked at me and she said, you will be one of three things, dentist, lawyer, or doctor. And then she pointed to the piano and she said, that will be your avocation. Now sit. She said, you place your fingers on the piano thusly. In other words, your fingers, all 10 of them, are curved. And when I relaxed, Mommy Dearest had a ruler and she came down on both hands and she said, raise them. I will supervise your practicing for 6 days a week, and on Sunday you may do as you please. It took me many years to discover her magic, because her name was Almeida. She was the oldest. Her mother was a full-blooded Cherokee, and her father, who wasn't there very much, was from West Africa. Now, I had a very wonderful percussionist who told me an interesting story which made me understand where my father, my grandfather, was. Since mother gave me the first piano lessons, he was obviously working on the road. And what she was saying, because you see...
Was he a musician?
Yeah, obviously. And indeed, mother had another first cousin who was one of the first men of color to play European music on the radio. So we're going back to the early 30s. When mother, you see, mother, oh boy. So I was taken to the Apollo Theater when I was 5 years old to hear the incredible drummer Chick Webb and his new singing star, whose hit was A Tisket a Tasket at Ella Fitzgerald. The next year, when the so-called King of Swing, Benny Goodman, was at the Paramount, mother trundled me to the Paramount, where I saw the immaculate Teddy Wilson and the extraordinary Lionel Hampton, who were in the quartet with Gene Krupa.
So I mean, Cecil, what do you make of this, that your mother is taking you at an early age, an impressionable age, to some of the most amazing musicians, and yet is telling you, as you stand in front of the piano, you will be a dentist, or a lawyer, or what was the third one?
You'll be a dentist, lawyer, or doctor.
Doctor, okay.
Well, you know, I mean, given if you're, you see, because Dad's father was a full-blooded Kiowa, and his mother was also African. So when you think about the oppression that these two groups of people have had, it is only a natural desire for parents to want their progeny mm-hmm. to be better off. However, she knew something. Because when I'm 5 years old and I ask for piano lesson, it has nothing to do with her, but it does have something to do with that up there. And she understood it because she gave me my first piano lesson. And, of course, isn't it interesting? She spoke French and German. I don't know how. Her favorite philosopher was Schopenhauer. You know, all of that. So she, obviously, being Almeida, but they called her Meiti. If you're into Egyptology, the goddess M-A-A-T-I and M-A-A-T, look for what they stand for. Mother was all of that. So what she was actually saying to me, I know you want this, but I'm not going to let you know I know it. But if you want it, really, then you will learn your craft. So the significance of her saying, I will supervise your practicing 6 days a week, and on Sunday you can do, and isn't it interesting, that's when I started whatever composing is. Mm. I mean, she was tough.
She sounds like a formidable woman.
I know what she gave me, you know. It's too bad she didn't give some of it to herself. But however, I mean, she married well. And that's what her grandmother told her to do.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Cecil Taylor, the pianist and composer. I mean, you said that's those Sundays when you were free to do what you want is when you began composing, whatever that means. You once told a colleague of mine, David Baker, that all of your music is based on the blues. And when he said, really, I don't hear it, you said, well, that's your problem. Do you stand by that? The blues?
It's fun, don't you see? I mean, the great Ellington Orchestra. If you listen to diminuendo and crescendo, or if you listen to C-Jazz, the magnificent thing about Ellington, because of his extraordinary ability at orchestration, a good many of those pieces are the blues.
Absolutely.
You would never know it.
Yep.
You see, and diminuendo and crescendo is really one of the great organized pieces of sound. And then when you think about that period of from 39, when he has Ben Webster and Johnny Hodges and Barney Bigard and Cootie Williams, Juan Tizo, when you listen to Jack the Bear, you know, when he discovers that bassist who died of tuberculosis, the age of 21, James Blanton, and, you know, Reminiscing in Tempo was written in 32 and 33. Diminuendo was written in 34, 35, but when that awful record company was getting ready to drop him, they played it at Newport.
Mm.
And, of course, Paul Gonzalez had played with Basie's band. But when you come into the Ellington band and you play tenor, Ben Webster has been in that band. And of course, Paul was just that solo that he takes at Newport is extraordinary.
Well, you know, those Ellington-Blanton duet recordings resurfaced not too many years ago.
Really?
Within the last decade. Yeah, they were put out on a sort of limited CD. Cecil Taylor is my guest. He's performing at the Rose Theater this Friday and Saturday night at 8 o'clock. And as in conversation, in performance, Cecil Taylor follows his muse where it takes him, and to watch him perform at the keyboard is an amazing experience. Cecil, thank you very much for joining us today. Have a great time on Friday and Saturday night.
Well, I've had a pretty good time here. Thank you.
Cecil Taylor on Soundcheck.